Welcome to the Big Web Show, everything web that matters. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeldman. Today's Big Web Show is sponsored by HostGator, and we'll have more to say about them soon. But first, let's meet today's guest. Michael Simmons is co-founder of Flexibits, who create apps that are enjoyable and flexible. They are the creators, among other things, of one of my favorite apps of all time, Fantastical, and Fantastical 2 in particular for iPhone, which takes that whole wretched mess of iCal, throws it away, and replaces it with something that's simple, intuitive, delightful to use, and completely language-based, which is pretty unique. So, hi, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. I'm a fan, so I'm very happy to be here.
Well, I'm a super fan of Fantastical, so thank you. It's very kind of you. How long is Fantastical? Fantastical 2 is new this year, right? You redid it from the ground up for iOS 7?
That's correct. It started on the Mac of all things, and we always get a lot of interesting comments when we tell everyone that we started on the Mac.
Like what?
Well, just, you know, why didn't you do iPhone? Because Fantastical 1, the initial Fantastical, like the one that started it all, came out on the Mac in May 2011.
What was the impetus behind making it?
Well, I've been doing software a long time. I've been in the Apple industry over 15 years. And what happened was I worked for a bunch of different companies, including Apple itself, and worked on I always found myself working on productivity or utility type software. Just naturally happened. And when I decided to start my own company, which is Flexibits, this was back actually in 2010, my business partner's Kent Sutherland, we had had an idea that we wanted to do productivity software, but we didn't know exactly what we wanted to do. So he had an engine that he had created. He designed it and wrote it himself, the natural language parsing engine that powers Fantastical. And it had the ability to parse, but it didn't have a purpose.
And just for people who are following who might not have tried Fantastical, what it means is, I would say, dinner with Jimmy next Wednesday at 2.
Exactly. And it parses it out.
And would make what you want. A calendar event out of that.
That's exactly right. And it knows exactly what you want. And the goal of the parsing engine, when Kent was originally working on it, was to make it work, you know, make it as predictable and as comfortable as possible. So
it's engine, like, it's kind of like, what's the platform? What did he build it in?
Well, I know it's basically, he uses a bunch of different things. I can't give a lot of technicals on it right now just because he wrote it. I didn't.
Okay.
But I do know that it's written in primarily C. And I know that it's portable because we're talking about possibly doing other platforms.
Is it, and obviously it's not artificially intelligent, right? It's not there isn't some creature in there understanding what I'm typing when I say dinner next Thursday. But so how does it work? It's just a set of a lot of rules, a lot of if then statements.
So it's a natural language parsing engine. What happens is it gets trained beforehand. So it handles a lot of different sentences and a lot of different scenarios before it becomes the engine that's put into the app.
So you mean it has more power? It has power to do more things than it does in the app.
Yeah. So what we do is we feed it a bunch of sentences and a bunch of examples and a bunch of wrong things. It's just basically it learns from all of these examples. And then once it's learned, it has this baseline of learning. And then
it actually does sound like artificial intelligence.
Oh, it definitely is. And
it is IA. Okay.
Definitely. If you look up machine learning, you can learn more about what's going on with our engine. But yeah, so everything is done and the engine's gotten better. I mean, if you go back to Fantastical 1 for the Mac and you come all the way to where we are now, it's absolutely gotten better because as users say, oh, this doesn't work, or we do more sentences or other things. It progressively gets better. Now it doesn't learn as you use it. So if you get Fantastical 2 now or Fantastical 1 for Mac and you're using it, it's not going to get better. We have to make it better by feeding it more sentences. But we kind of then feed it sentences, we get it smart, we fix bugs, blah, 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 and we lock it in, and then we ship it with the app.
I mean, any kind of sentence, like something from Oscar Wilde, something from Poe, like anything?
No, it has to be a sentence that's formed at what we think you would be entering for an event. Well, so the engine, as I mentioned earlier, so Kent had this engine that really just took something and did something with it. And the challenge was, what kind of app could we make with it? You know, we could have made a to-do app. We could have made an assistant app. We could have made a more generic map app, whatever. We decided to do calendaring. And that's how fantastic it came to be.
So it's like Siri in a way.
Yeah. I mean, we were out obviously before Siri, and sure, it is like Siri in a way, but for our purpose, and this was sort of to answer your question, the reason why we picked calendaring is calendaring. I had problems using calendars. I have a lot of appointments. I was a busy guy doing a lot of things. I hated using my calendar. And as soon as I saw the opportunity to say, wait a minute, I don't have to click 50 boxes to make an appointment, right? I don't have to go through all of this user interface to tell it what I want. I could just type it and tell it what I want.
What calendars had you used in the past? Did you ever use Now Up to Date back in the day?
Oh, I wasn't a user of it, but I had used it. Yeah. Which, to me it was a very cumbersome app. Did a lot, but it was a cumbersome app.
What's your history with using other people's calendar software?
Like, you know, calendars. No, yeah, sure. Calendar software to me was always something that you need to have a baseline of function, right? You need to have it do something like store events. But I never used a calendar app that I liked. I have to say iCal, which is what I generally used before Fantastical came to be. I used iCal. That was my calendar app of choice. Because I basically was making simple events. I wanted something that synced. Obviously, it synced with iCloud. Or Mobile Me at the time, whatever. And it worked. It worked. I didn't like it. It wasn't great. It wasn't the best, but it worked for me. But, you know, looking back at other calendars that I had used in the past, BusyCal, they're just to me bloated. They just have too much stuff. They're not focused and the user interface doesn't improve anything. It seems to me like other calendar apps out there, I mean, even competitors to Fantastical now, and I don't say this because they're competitors. I say this because I'd like to see a better calendar app. Even if someone comes along and makes something better, then great. Everyone gets a better app. No one's really thinking about the user interface. No one's thinking about the event creation and the event management. And I think that's what we think about every day.
How do you keep thinking about something? I mean, this is true for anyone who works on a product or works in-house at a magazine or anything. How do you wake up every day inspired about and having fresh creative insights on the same thing?
Well, for Fantastical, of course, when we did it, you know, for the Mac at first, you know, we had a lot of things we had ideas for, and then you have to ship a 1.0, right? So there comes a point where you have to ship, and we're very big believers in you have to ship. Even if you have something that's like, oh, but just one more feature. Oh, we just got to get this in. We know that that will ultimately delay the project and cause bigger problems down the road. It's better to ship and then get stuff in later.
Yep.
For us, yeah, exactly. For us, I think what inspires us every day is, first of all, we have a long list of stuff we couldn't get in 1.0 or 2.0, right? So that list just keeps gnawing away at us. But I think for us, at least for myself, I'll speak for myself, I love that we've solved calendaring. And I don't know if that sounds a little self-centered or not, but every time I use Fantastical, and just so you know, the bar of how well we're doing was during the development and the design, how much I liked using the app, how much it solved my problems. And I really built this app for myself.
You scratched your own itch.
Exactly. And what inspires me every day is, how can I make this app even better for myself? What problems do I still have? What things would I still want to do? And off we go.
So it's you're doing kind of the same thing 37 Signals does. You write self-design, scratching your own itch. Have you done any? Do you ever bring it? You know, do user testing? I hate that phrase because it sounds like you're testing users. But do you ever bring in users to test your products, or do you? What kind of research, if any, do you do, or you just keep on making it better to your own liking? How does that work?
We do user testing. It's generally friends and family. So I will say this, there's some developers or some people out there that I've seen where, you know, they try to just release something and they're like, well, people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. I don't adhere to that because I'm not everyone and everyone's like me. Right? Everyone's not like me. Everyone's different and I'm different. So for me, for what I like, not everyone's going to like it. Sure, I've done some designs that seem to have done well and have taken off. So that means that I probably have a good finger on the pulse of taste. But we do testing with friends and family. During Fantastic Hal for Max test, we had a pretty nice test list of both friends, family, peers, and things like that. Things that people didn't like doesn't mean we were going to change it, right? Because at the end of the day, this is our app, and we can't just change every single thing someone doesn't like, or then you're designing by committee. But we surely took the advice that we got and listened when something didn't make sense or something was confusing or something wasn't helpful.
Right. You're the designer and developer. How does it work? Kent obviously did the, let's call it the back end. He did the database, but who designed the interface?
So I primarily designed the interface. So we're two guys. It's just Kent and myself. And by the way, I did a quick check on some of the code repository stuff. So it was primarily written in C++, but it's not like a one thing. It's not just like the parser's one project. It's a bunch of different things together, but it's mostly C++. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, great.
But the way it works, yeah. So Kent does all the code. Excuse me. We do collaborate together. I coded a long time ago, and I have enough knowledge of programming that I bring that to the table. So I don't just say, oh, wouldn't it be great if we did this stuff? And then I don't realize that it takes like a year to do or whatever. Mm-hmm. I definitely have enough knowledge, but I don't code. I'll do things like make builds or submit builds. I'm definitely technical enough to handle a lot of the process stuff and the crashes and analyze stuff and support. But my primary role is the design. The concept of the app was mine. The designing of the app was mine. Kent is also very good at design as well, so I don't want to marginalize him. He's helped me. But in terms of the specific roles, the ideas for the apps, pushing everything along and really doing the core design and conception, that's me.
Do you see yourselves rolling out a bunch of other apps based on natural language parsing, or you really want to focus on this for the foreseeable future?
No, we actually do want to do other apps. And one of the things we announced it last year. And as you know, you're never supposed to announce apps, right? You know, ETAs are the worst, right?
I've had that bite me. Yeah, yeah.
But last year, we've actually already started working on a second app, a second app to use our engine and that we want to solve a problem with. And I'll reiterate it again because I already shot myself in the foot. We're doing a contacts app. And it's actually quite a long. The reason why it keeps getting delayed and the reason why it hasn't shipped yet is because Fantastic Hal 2 came to be because of iOS 7.
You've written about that some, but let's talk about the story for people who haven't seen it.
Yeah, sure.
Where were you originally going and what changed?
In terms of the contacts app?
No. I got side-railed back to Fantastical because of iOS 7 and that story. So I want to talk about contacts apps for sure.
Yeah, certainly. So what happened with Fantastical, and this is very interesting because I do, especially as a designer, I really love iOS 7 and I can't stress it enough. I stress it all the time. But what happened was we had been working on Fantastical for iPad, like a native iPad version.
Right.
And that was being worked simultaneously with the Contacts app, which, by the way, the Contacts app will be a Mac app at first, just like Fantastical was.
And like Chatology is.
Exactly. I have this theory, and I mean, Kent has it as well. We think if you do a productivity app, you have to do it on the desktop first because the place to do work, you know, it's just like everyone talks about, is the desktop. That's really kind of the productivity foundation. And if you build a good platform and you build a good app that works for people there, then you do have to rethink it because Fantastical for iPhone is not just Fantastical for Mac ported. It's a whole new app. It's been rethought and redesigned for the Go, just the way the iPad version is going to be. But I think you have to start on the Mac. Our Contacts app will start on the Mac and you solve the problems there and you make it really good there. And then you can take it, if it's a good idea, you can take it to the mobile and the portable, which is the iPad. But yeah, what happened was we were working on iPad and our Contacts app, and iOS 7 came at WWDC, and literally from the second I saw the video when they were, you know, unveiling it, I was inspired. I got what iOS 7 was about. Everyone saw it as just this flat thing, and they're just removing stuff, but I saw it as no. They're taking away all the stuff that has been distracting, all the stuff that people have been spending time on that doesn't matter. And I don't know. It immediately inspired me. And I remember saying to Kent, literally during the keynote, oh my God, we're redoing Fantastical for iPhone. We're rebuilding it. And, you know, of course.
And he was happy with that?
I don't know. I think I shocked and stunned him. I mean, he didn't say no, we're not. So when I get ideas, he knows more or less if I'm really passionate about the ideas, they're going to happen. So I think he kind of didn't want to stop me because I was on a roll, and off we went. And here we are, you know, we shipped Fantastical 2 about 3 weeks ago. It's done phenomenal. We actually hit number one in the App Store, which is just amazing. And
wow,
people seem to really love it.
And people just, again, like Twitterific by Icon Factory did the same thing. They basically said, well, here's this new version, so we're going to charge for it because it's a really new version, and people seem happy to pay for it. I mean, I didn't think twice about it. The thing with these apps is they're not, I'm fortunate I don't live in the third world, and I, you know, if something's $2.99, I'm just going to say, okay, I'm not going to go, hey, I paid you $2.99 5 years ago, why can't I keep getting upgrades forever? But you found that your user base obviously bought into that, right?
Well, sort of. We handled it, excuse me, we handled it a little bit different than, from what I could tell, other developers handled it as. So what we did was we had specifically put up a blog post before we shipped. You know, generally, again, it's not good to announce what's coming or what you're doing because, of course, dates could change and things like that. But when iOS 7 hit and we weren't going to have a proper, if you will, iOS 7 redesign, we had to let our users know what was going on. Now, we did issue iOS 7 compatibility fixes because there were some bugs. So Fantastical 1 users were taken care of. The app would work at least, right? But
right.
Everyone, of course, wanted iOS 7 nativeness, if you will. So we released a blog post and we basically had said that it's coming and you're going to have to pay. And oh no, a lot of people actually went up in arms. Like, we got a lot of negative feedback and, you know, how could you charge us? And this first app has only been out, you know, about a year. And, you know, some people would say, oh, well, if it was over a year, I'd understand. And I mean, here's the basic premise. I'm a consumer as well. And if I buy something and a year later something else comes out, you kind of feel, eh, whatever. But in this case, Fantastical 2 was really a new app. It has a ton of new features, a brand new design. It fully takes advantage of iOS 7. It wasn't just something that took us a week or two. If it would have just been a skinning or a change in that,
I think
we wouldn't have charged.
Yeah, that would have been, I'm going to guess, because that's how a lot of people reacted to iOS 7. Oh, they've changed the skin.
That's right. And that's the majority of people did that. And you know what's actually funny? In our replies via support, we sort of, obviously, we got a decent number of replies. And our position is this. You don't have to buy Fantastical 2. Fantastical 1, we've updated for iOS 7. It still continues to work. Nothing has changed. The same app you bought continues to work. If you want the new design and the new features that we put a lot of time into, we hope you'll spend a few dollars and support us. Simple. I mean, we're not, the old app is not a subscription app. It doesn't just stop running, right? And right. Believe it or not, like, the vast majority of people responded well to that. They were like, okay, that's reasonable. I think people see it as a money grab initially because they're just like, well, what am I getting? You're just asking for $3 more. But once you kind of lay it out, like, no, we've thought about this. We updated Fantastical 1 for bug fixes. Fantastical 2 is all new and da-da-da-da-da, and we're just asking you to support us, and it's real time and all of that. I think people actually from my experience, I can tell you, people actually are like, oh, yeah, that's reasonable. We'll do it.
Daring Fireball probably helped, right? John Gruber's endorsement?
Yeah, for sure. We the amount of coverage that we got, actually.
The Verge, Macworld, you got a lot of coverage, yeah.
Yeah.
All positive.
Yeah, all positive. And, you know, all I can do is, I mean, when we do a launch, part of the thing is people ask me all the time, how do you do an app launch so big? I mean, the key is building a good app. And I don't mean to make that sound simple, but we built Fantastical 2. We made something that we hope people would like. We made something that we liked, and we put it out there. If it wouldn't have been good, I don't think people like John Gruber or The Verge or Vitici at Mac Stories or Macworld would have posted about it, right? They wouldn't have cared. So you have to make something really good.
Right. I'll just say, I'll interject here that you guys are self-funded. So this is not like you have millions of dollars of someone else's money to play with and, you know, hire Kanye West to come entertain at this blowout party. And have chopped liver in the shape of a swan and ecstasy and fountains and stuff. You don't have that stuff, right?
That is correct. Which it's all just the two of us.
And you guys are in Silicon Valley, right? So that isn't abnormal in your world to the thing that I just described.
No, it's not. My business partner is actually in Boston, just so you know. But okay. Primarily, I mean, I run the operations here from the Bay Area. Yeah, correct. But yeah, no, it's not uncommon. I mean, you know, you can have funding, and there are other apps out there that do funding, and they blow through a lot of money on advertising and this and that. And you know, I advise some companies actually on their stuff, and I always say this: forget all the extraneous stuff. Make the app great, because you can make a lot of noise and you can really be out there, but at the end of the day, the app is going to carry you. I can't stress that enough. The app is going to be what carries you.
I got turned onto it word of mouth. Jason Santa Maria and Mandy Brown showed it to me. Basically, I was going like, we were having a book apart meeting. I was like, damn it, iCal. And they were like, oh, they were like, oh, you're still using Nescafe? I use real coffee. It was just like,
you're still using Folgers crystals,
right? You're still using Folgers crystals. Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's wrong with iCal? Why is it so frustrating, do you think?
I forgot where it was. I was somewhere and someone said, you know, Steve Jobs obviously never used iCal. That's one of the apps that he never used. And that's why it was so bad. You know, I don't necessarily believe that. I mean, I don't know what he used and I'm not going to pretend to know, but here's what I do know. I think Apple needed a calendar app in their OS. And I think as they saw it, they're not a calendar app company, right? They're a company that builds computers and software for media primarily and for basic functions. They had to have a calendar app. And to be honest, they did a good enough job. I'm not saying I love iCal, or I'm not saying I love the new, you know, now they call it calendar. I'm not saying I love it, but it does work.
Well,
it does function.
I think they had to... I think they were distracted by the need to get sync working. They were, it's weird. Apple's sort of gone down the road that Microsoft pioneered 10 years ago. Apple's doing it now and people don't
really
complain. But what Microsoft had going for 10 years ago, they weren't selling like cutting edge or beautiful or, you know, a magical experience. They were saying, you know what? We have all these apps and they work well together.
They actually function.
They function well together, and you can get your mail. If there's a dock in it, you can open it in the mail app inside a little component of our document app. You know, all the things work together really well, and that's what Apple has done in the past 10 years. And so iCal, and I think also they were really, really working on sync, right? Because they knew they were becoming a device company. They knew, and they were working on sync before they even came out with the iPhone, because they knew. It was going to be a multi-device world. They weren't going to make their big living just selling Macintoshes because, you know, that's finite.
But that's exactly right.
But they saw that. And the only way this stuff makes sense is if I can sync all that. And your product wouldn't stand a chance if it didn't work with their product, if it couldn't take the same information that iCal has and sync in the same way.
Yeah, exactly. To give Apple a lot of credit, I mean, Fantastical 2 actually leverages iOS. It leverages VentKit. It leverages the accounts that Apple lets you set up in settings, right? So if Apple didn't have a really good sync engine and their stuff wasn't able to communicate with servers like Google and Yahoo and, you know, all of the normal calendaring servers.
All that brilliant hard work they did.
Exactly. And, you know, like you said, Microsoft.
I just want to say, at HappyCog, there's something everyone has to do and they have to use a government website to do it. And we really wanted to, as a public service, to put a super cool alternate front end on this government website and we weren't able to do it for a lot of legal reasons. And, you know, it would have been a huge project, but we got off on talking about what we would do to improve it. Instead of everyone can have the experience where you go use something and it's frustrating and you hate it and you just say, boy, software sucks. These guys suck. But it's much more interesting to say, well, what could we do that would be super cool and elegant and simple and fun and delightful instead of that?
Again, you're right. You're exactly right. I mean, Microsoft, I've as an Apple guy, I've always admired Microsoft, and I think people discredit how much work it was to build those sort of apps that actually, here comes, worked, right? The whole reason why Microsoft won when they won, or during the time when people think they won and Apple lost. I don't see it that way, but that's why I said when people see it that way, is they had apps that actually did stuff and they integrated and they worked and they were solutions, right? Businesses invested money because it actually allowed their employees to be productive. And Apple now, only in the last X years, has had to change and start building this stuff, right? Between sync and calendar and mail and contacts and so on and so forth.
And now we're judging them on that.
Exactly.
And people get really pissed because...
Exactly. And now, their apps are just secondary kind of apps. They're just secondary kind of apps. I think they're baseline apps. They do baseline functionality.
It's interesting. I used to... I used to have a recording studio. I know you're a musician too. I had a recording studio, and long before GarageBand or anything, I mean, way back in the day, I had this stuff. And then after I'd stopped being a musician, but I was still tinkering, I had MP3 software that I really liked, and it was pretty sophisticated. And Apple bought that product and it basically killed it and used it. Its guts to make iTunes. And initially iTunes, and we didn't see, I don't know how Steve saw 10 years into the future what he was going to do with it, but, you know, all I saw was that they'd taken a really good piece of MP3 editing software and turned it into this little babyish crap, right?
That's right. But they took this, like, professional tool that did all this stuff, and it was just now just a player.
I mean, they used to have an amazing QuickTime thing, and they got rid of that. So, you know, it's like... They do that. They sort of have super expensive high-end stuff, like if you're producing television shows, you might want our video editing suite that costs thousands of dollars. Or we'll now give you a free version of this thing that used to cost $30, but it doesn't really do very much. So, yeah, there's no – that middle ground where a lot of creative people live used to be what Apple fed. It was like – wasn't entry level – wasn't basic, it wasn't lowest common denominator, but it right. wasn't crazy. It was something that a creative person could just get their hands on. And in a way, to become a company that appeals to all consumers, which they had to do to grow, they abandoned their initial core fan base to some extent. They abandoned their initial core fan base of just like passionate creative nerds.
Yeah, understood.
Yeah, and that was sad. That's still,
you know. The thing with Apple that's also interesting, and like I said, I've been in that industry a long time. I've noticed this. Apple wants to give people just enough that it functions, but no more, so then they can decide what people really want and add it later. Because at the end of the day, if you give people too much stuff, they get overwhelmed. They're not sure what to do. It doesn't necessarily solve the need. I mean, I know I want more stuff, right? But Apple's MO has always been to provide just enough, maybe even a little less than just enough. And then eventually they might add later. And from a user experience point of view, like when I do my designs and I'm thinking about what we're putting in and all this stuff, that idea, that concept is actually quite good. You have to look forward and think about what users are going to do or where the frustration and pain points are going to come in. But starting simple is actually a really good design philosophy, because if you put too much stuff in, what kind of design do you have?
Right.
So I know what you were talking about with the MP3 app, because believe it or not, I was actually part of the company that Apple acquired for the CD burning software for iTunes.
Okay.
So I was there during that phase, and same thing with the CD software. We had all this.
Was that Toast?
Actually, it was called CD Master. It was from a company called Radiologic, which was not very well known at the time. The product was amazing and solid. And, you know, Apple decided to bring it on, put it as part of the iTunes stuff, and that's what became the Burning Engine. It's still actually
Engine. That was, again, before the iTunes Store, before all this stuff. That was when
2000.
Yeah, 2001. They had George. Wait a minute. They had Parliament Funkadelic, George Clinton doing a commercial saying, "It's your music. Burn it on a Mac."
That's right.
And that was the claim, that you could rip your own music on a Mac. That was the big
exactly. thing. And Apple kept it simple, right? They kept it as simple as, here's your music, put in a disc, it burns, it works, it's done. I mean, at that time, they really did revolutionize the whole music experience by what? Keeping it simple, right?
Yep.
So I will say, with things like calendar and other things like contacts, Apple sometimes frustrates me because their stuff is so simple. But you know what? Again, it does fulfill that need. It does. It at least it at least lets you manage contacts and sync them.
I want to talk about human interface guidelines. But before we do, HostGator, it's time to thank the sponsor that's allowing us to have this lovely conversation. So are you ready? You've heard of HostGator, have you not?
I definitely have heard of HostGator.
HostGator, I believe they are a sponsor of your show.
That's right, Identical Cousins.
And HostGator is the best place to get yourself a website. They offer premium web hosting at low costs. And you can grab a .NET. .NET is the best way to get a domain name that's not limited to 180 characters. And HostGator offers 24/7/365 chat, phone, and email support. HostGator offers hosting for any size site with shared VPS and dedicated servers. They can move your site for you if you want to transfer it to them. Do you need a website for your next killer startup idea or cat blog? HostGator.com has you covered. HostGator.com, that name again, HostGator.com offers premium web hosting at low prices. While you're there, grab a .NET. Getting a short, memorable domain name can be a challenge, but you know that, Michael Simmons. .NET has lots of great options available. And HostGator offers 24/7/365 phone, chat, and email support, as I already mentioned. If you need help anytime, night or day, give them a call. What happens if your site explodes? You get internet famous. What happens then? Do they cap you? Do they cut you off at the knees? No. HostGator still has you covered with VPS and dedicated servers. Do you have a website somewhere else and you're not happy? HostGator will move it for you. They do all the hard work. So head over to HostGator.com, buy yourself some hosting, get yourself some .NETs, and use coupon code WEB to get an extra 25% off and support this show. That's right. Coupon code WEB for web, as in Big Web Show. If you do this, it will support this show, which means I can keep interviewing brilliant and interesting people like Michael Simmons.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You are quite welcome, sir. The reason I said human interface guidelines a moment ago is that the one thing that Apple used to be absolutely impeccable at and has seemingly lost their way. And there used to be a uniformity to the way things worked. And as you know, and I don't know that iOS 7 really solved this. But on the Mac and on devices, different things can work different ways. Even on the device platform, some apps, this swipe does something and some apps it doesn't and all that. They used to be, if I can say, more fascist, but in a benevolent way.
No, I know exactly what you mean. The reason that this came to be, as far as I can tell from my memory, is because of apps like Calendar, iCal, and Mail. Basically, you know, in the old days that we're talking about, when they were uniform, there weren't that many apps, right? I mean, you kind of had your baseline of apps. Now there's just so many apps that they have all these teams. And then these teams are like with iTunes, oh, we have to give it this look, or we have to give it this look. Or then Brushed Metal came in, and then, you know, the black heads up display. And I mean, you can go on and on and on and talk about all these different design things that came in, but that's what started happening. You started having all these little islands of apps, and everybody unfortunately didn't follow it. You know, there's one, so I'm a big stickler about human interface guidelines, and I used to know the Higgs. I mean, the Higgs changed so much, it doesn't matter. But there's one thing I see a lot of app developers doing on the Mac, and I always send them an email just to kind of yell at them. If you have preferences, if you bring up a preferences window on a Mac app, It should absolutely not have a yellow minimize button. Now, you have to actually do something. Like the default, when you're bringing in the default panel for that, I think it's like an NS panel or something, or maybe it's an NS window. It has the minimize thing because that's just how a window works.
What do you mean yellow? Oh, I always use graphite in my
preferences.
So that middle button, yeah.
Yeah, the middle minus button, exactly. So
preferences should, okay, so
they should never have that. So if you look at an app that has that, they just
Evernote. I'm in Evernote right now.
Well,
and I love Evernote.
But they're designer guy. Because in preferences, right, you're opening preferences. You shouldn't minimize that window. Preferences should be something that I'm not saying.
Modal. It's modal. You make your adjustment and close it, which activates the preference change. If I minimize it, have I in fact made the change or not? I don't know.
Maybe or maybe not. It depends on if also the developer has actually made it a live update or on close. But either way, you're supposed to go in, tweak your settings, and put it away.
And I shouldn't have the choice not to.
That's right. And even Apple apps, just so you know, will fail on this test, if you will. If you go into...
That's what I was talking about.
Yep, yep, yep. I'm trying to find one right now. Actually, you want to know what? On Mavericks?
Safari. Okay, Safari, they've blocked it out. So that's good.
Well, Safari used to have it. I actually think on Mavericks, they've fixed some of the apps that used to fail on it. Let's see. Does Calendar still do it? No. So I think actually, you know what? I think Mavericks has actually fixed it, so it doesn't do it anymore.
We're not. I have not upgraded to Mavericks yet. At our studio, we had Ryan Ireland run some tests and found some problems, like in Mail.
Okay.
A compatibility problem, so we didn't do it. And then Mike Pick, who I share a studio with, upgraded and didn't have any problems. And then he couldn't open. What was it? He couldn't. This is anecdotal. Your mileage may vary, but he couldn't open an Illustrator file.
Okay.
I don't know why. It was like, or something, or he couldn't save an Illustrator file. I don't remember what the exact problem was, but it seemed like there was some. Well,
for what it's worth, there were a lot of Mail problems in the beginning. They have since released some updates to fix that, but
like today, I think actually.
Yeah, perhaps there was another one. I mean, I know they've been trying to get the fixes out, but it's at a point now where, just again, anecdotally from what I've heard from people, it's pretty solid now. I mean, I've been using it since it came out, and it's always been good for me, but maybe another couple months and then you can switch.
I used to update everything right away as soon as it came out. I was that guy. My friend Steve McCarron, who actually taught me a lot about the Macintosh years and years ago, he would always wait. And I started having lots of problems, especially like in the early 2000s, where I'd buy the new Mac and I'd put the new operating system on the new Mac and I'd have a meltdown. And other people would say, well, you have a curse or whatever. But I found that I've had a lot fewer problems now that I just wait.
That's good.
I just, you know, and I hate being the guy that waits. It makes me feel like kind of John McCain-ish in a way.
Well, I'll tell you a little secret. I wait on hardware. I actually wait on hardware now. I and everyone always comes down to me, oh, just get it and enjoy it. I'm like, no, I'm going to wait a few months and see what bubbles out of it.
Yeah, and well, it makes sense. It makes sense, because when you don't, that's when things can happen that are sad.
Exactly.
I just had a very strange situation happen where my iMac at home started having a noisy fan. I didn't know why. I did all the things that you're supposed to do to fix that. I finally ran the SMC controller reset. And when I did that, the iMac died. It just could not start up again. Huh. I left it untouched for 2 days. I was very unhappy. I disconnected it from the wall. 2 days later, at someone's recommendation on Twitter, I plugged it in and held down the power button, and it worked. And I thought, okay, I wonder what that was about. That's weird. The only reason I'm telling the story is this week, at the beginning of this week, on Monday, the iMac in my studio, same generation, died on a restart. It wasn't had nothing to do with SMC control. It was just like, oh gosh, I have a lot of things open. I'll restart. I restarted. I went to get a coffee. When I came back, it was dead, and I could not power. I said, this is crazy. It's dead, boy. Like the one that I had at home. Like, what could possibly cause this? And I could not get it working that whole day. So I disconnected it from the wall. Luckily, I had a little laptop. I worked on the laptop. The next day, I came in, worked on the laptop for a while. Then in the afternoon, I plugged it back in, and it's been fine ever since.
I hate when those kind of thing happens, because then you wonder when it's going to creep up and happen again.
And then people said, well, it's Mavericks. I'm like, no, I didn't upgrade to Mavericks. Perhaps there's something, you know, in the App Store, some app that got an update to be Mavericks compatible did something to the power management of this generation of iMacs. I don't know. It seemed really weird. Like, you know, a computer dies and then comes back to life 2 days later. Not that weird. Two of them do in the same week, like within 4 days of each other. That starts to seem weird. I'm like, am I magnetic? Is there something that I'm doing? And it's not like, you know, it's not
there's
like...
There's no way to explain it, so what are you going to do?
It's mystical.
It is mystical.
Which is, I think, your next product, Mystical.
Mystical. So, yeah. So, anyway, so we're doing calendars, and then... so then iOS 7 came back. You know, actually, you mentioned one thing about Apple being a little bit more fascist or autonomous, but I think iOS 7 is going to make this better, and I already am starting to see that. So... Yeah, sure. If you look at iOS 7 apps, you have a bunch that are just bright, or a bunch that are this, or a bunch that are that. And obviously, as you see with Fantastical 2, we decided to do our own design, right? We have the red header, white day ticker calendar, and then a black list. Of course, you can turn on an optional light theme. I don't know if you saw that in settings, but you can make it bright if you want.
Yep.
And that way we give the person, the user, the control. We are considering putting in an automatic day-night mode, because some people say, well, I want it at night. I don't want it bright. I want it dark, and vice versa. That's an interesting thing.
Make that an option if you do that, please.
It will be an option.
I'm actually liking the white. I'm liking the sort of printed book look of the thing. And I love how as each event passes, you just gray it back. It's still there to remind me of what I did. But, and I got to tell you, on a busy day like today, when I have like 20 things to do, I love seeing them just fade back. It's like,
exactly. It's like picking them off, right?
It's like the end of the day is approaching, sir.
That's right. And and people have asked us, believe it or not, a lot of people have asked us to make all past events gray. In other words, even when you're scrolling in the back. And we're not going to do that, because if you're looking for an event in the past, then you're obviously looking for something, and the gray doesn't help you find it. The point is that you dim today so you can focus on what's upcoming. It's not about dimming all past events of all time. It's about dimming past events for today.
Did you actually, did you study interaction design in college? Was that an option when you were in college, or is this all things that you've just learned?
You know, for me, what's weird is my history. I actually was a film major in college. I was going to go into film. And I was always a creative type. I mean, I definitely liked media, right? I was a media arts student, if you will. And I always loved interactive stuff. And I always was into computers from a little boy. You know, I had a VIC-20, a Commodore 64, and then an Amiga. And that's when I was programming. And, you know, I did the demo scene. And I was always into the visuals and the audio. But I didn't take any specific interaction classes. Obviously, in college, I took design classes. And in film classes, I had to do things on scenes and acting and writing and, you know, a lot of humanities stuff. But no, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I've done, I've just been lucky that I've had the, I guess, taste to know. I really use myself as the bar. I kind of say, does this make sense? And if it makes sense to me, then it seems to be making sense to other people. So it's kind of a good thing.
And you know what? And Alfred Hitchcock would show films to other people, especially his wife, after he'd cut them together. But he shot them and directed them the way he thought it worked. And that's what directors do. So your film background and the way you design kind of go together, right? Martin Scorsese doesn't have a committee, and he doesn't do testing on plots.
No, and I'm definitely biased. Like when I know I like an idea, I'm going to try to convince others. And if I can't convince others, I still go with it. Like my wife, this is a funny story. She actually didn't like Fantastical. She told me she thought it was a silly idea. She didn't think it would work. And literally she has eaten those words, because I remember after we shipped it and she was using it, I'm talking about the Mac version, she's like, oh my God, this app was great. She's like, I was totally wrong. She's like, you know, at first it just seemed like a gimmick, or it seemed like something I wouldn't use, but she's like, I was wrong. And that's why I think sometimes if you have a really good idea and you believe in it, and this goes obviously for a lot of designers, developers, entrepreneurs, whatever, if you really believe in something and you give up because someone tells you no, then you are the failure of your project. If you believe in something, make it through. It'll fail when it fails. If you fail it sooner on your own, then you're the cause of the failure.
That's a wonderful, inspiring quotation and idea for designers. And I appreciate you sharing that. But at the same time, you seem like a really nice guy. I'm assuming that you're happily married, and I'd like you to stay that way. So I need you to say something wonderful and smart that your wife said or did where you were wrong. Because she may listen, and she
probably will listen. I love my wife. I couldn't have done Fantastical without her support of telling me it was bad so I can continue pushing on and proving her wrong.
Not exactly how I saw that working out, but okay. If you're happy, I'm happy. We have only a couple more minutes. You're a New York boy, but you've been living in San Francisco area for how long now?
13 years. So I moved out here in 2000. Funny that we talked earlier about the CD recording thing. I actually moved out here for that company. So I was working here on the East Coast. I was actually working on interactive television, believe it or not. So this was kind of like my foray into user designs. I was working on video on demand and all sort of interactive TV, TiVo before it was coming out. I worked for one of the largest cable companies, cable TV companies. I'm sure you know them, Cablevision. And I did a lot of the interactive UI stuff with them. And I had this opportunity to come out here and work on that CD software. And literally within 6 months, we're being acquired by Apple.
Do you think of yourself as an app designer, an interaction designer, a designer?
It's tough. You know, I was hanging out with our neighbors on Halloween and everyone's like, well, what do you do? How do you class? I don't know. I mean, like the short version is I make apps. I that's how I see myself. I see myself as someone who makes apps. Sure, that involves design. Sure, that involves interaction, you know, creativity. I'm definitely a creative. If someone says, you know, would you rather want to manage a team or be the creative guy that sits in the background designing? I'd be the creative guy in the background designing all day long. I realize that leading a team or maybe managing is part of the means to the end, but I'm definitely a creative guy. I want to be the person who designs the stuff and makes it work well, but I don't. It's funny. I just don't have a thing that I label myself. I make apps.
Well, I think for a neighbor, saying you make apps is a great thing too. I mean, yeah. I have a different answer depending on who I'm talking to. Like sure. I if I'm talking to somebody on an airplane, I'll say I design things on the internet.
Right.
That's
right.
Not how I would say it to someone in our field.
Exactly.
But that's how I say it.
It clarifies what you do. It gives them an idea of what industry you're in and lets them know what type of work you do.
But make apps is the coolest thing. My daughter still thinks it's kind of sad that I only make websites. She wants me to make apps. You know, she's 9, but she thinks for a while she thought I invented the iPhone, which when she was a lot younger, which was
how long were you able to keep that going
for? I slowly my conscience got the better of me. That really wasn't me. Well, you know Steve Jobs, right? Well, not exactly. So
not really. Not exactly.
Not exactly. So, yeah, but you know.
And just to answer one of the things you asked about earlier with the contacts app, we haven't announced a lot about it, but what I will say is this. All the design is basically done. A lot of the problems right now, as always, are on the details, right? Because Fantastic Hal is great because of details, like the floating words when you type in the sentence, and then, of course, it floats down into place to tell you what's happened. Details like that are what we're really taking time on, because if we're going to release this contacts app, it really has to be good, right? We can't just release a contacts app that just basically is like every other contacts app. So what I can just tell you is what I've told everyone else, because we're not saying much. It's going to be a contacts app in the spirit of Fantastic Hal. It's going to be a better way to add, manage, edit, and act on your contacts. And that's about all we're saying at this time.
I will tell you a new contacts app, which you've probably tried everything. I don't know how I became aware of Brewster like 3 days ago. Like Brewster, like Brewster McLeod, B-R-E-W, like brew, like have a brew, Brewster. Yeah. It's pretty, but that's, and I always like that, but what it does that's interesting to me, and I don't know if you're planning to do this or not, but, is it okay to talk about stuff like this? I guess it is.
Sure. Well, so you can talk about it.
Well, so here's what Brewster does that I like. It combines all my contacts, but not in a clusterfucky way. I've tried other apps that would like, there are people I write with in Gmail all day. And as a result, because I only wrote to them in Gmail, they're not in my contacts, my Apple contacts app on my Mac, right? If I wrote to them in Mail, which I only really use on my phone, if I write to them in Mail and say, add this contact, they'll be in my contacts book.
Right.
But if I interact with them on Gmail, they won't be. So I've tried other apps that would try to grab all those things in Facebook, but what they end up doing is giving you like a million redundant contacts and they suck. What this thing does, it sort of synthesizes, finds all these things that you tell it to, combines them, and then I can go into my contacts app and just basically turn off everything but Brewster contacts. And now suddenly I have one very clean canonical listing of all my contacts with the highest res photo possible and with everything in there that I need to have about that contact. So,
yeah, I will say this looks really nice. This isn't the problem we're trying to solve. Obviously, unification of contacts is important. Like this is, I've seen other apps try to do this, and honestly, this looks like it's really well done. I'm going to check it out for sure.
I saw that
ours is different. Yeah. Ours is more of a management.
Cool. Okay. Good, because there's room for both.
Yeah, and I think I mean I don't know if they have an API or a thing that interacts with them. Actually, this might be a good thing for us to ping them and see if you know if they have a way to use them. Although I guess you could use Brewster to use and combine all of your addresses, and then you could use our app to then edit, manage, interact, and act on potentially.
It, you know, either way sounds interesting. Do you have a name for your product yet, or you can't even say that?
We do have a name, but we're not announcing it. Actually, so just so you know how far ahead we are, the name is done, the icon is done. I mean, we're in a phase right now where just simply because Fantastic Hell 2 came out, and now Fantastic Hell for iPad, we're trying to finish up. We have to prioritize because we're only two guys. And we have talked about, you know, do we expand the company and get more people? But we want to keep it small. We want to be a couple guys making apps.
This is going to sound like a super first world luxury problem, but I don't even calendar. I don't do any calendaring on my iPad anymore. There's no sense to it. I can't use iCal on that. They removed the ugly detritus. They removed the sort of tacky calendar-like thing.
Right.
But that thing, those things made it usable. Like there's two kinds of, there's design that's so good that just from the type hierarchy and white space, everything works and you don't need anything else. That's not iCal. It never
works. That's exactly right. No, that's exactly
iCal right. Really needed all those little bands and buttons and drop shadows. And once they took that away and replaced it with nothing, what this looks like is a bad Swiss poster.
No,
I have no idea where events are, or, you know, I get hopelessly lost. And, you know, I can use your app on my phone and I'm happy to do that.
Well, that's what happens with the whole design by committee thing, right? Everyone says, oh, get rid of the leather or get rid of this or get rid of that. And okay, they got rid of it. And now you see how the app is, right?
I think there might have been a way to do it. It seems like maybe Jonathan Ive wasn't paying attention to the calendar program, or if he was, he doesn't know how to design software that well. He's brilliant at hardware. I don't know what the story was. Or they needed two more months and they didn't have two more months. But it just looks like numbers and letters floating around at random in an ugly gridless mess. I'm sure there is a grid underneath. There's probably a really awesome grid under. I don't even see it. I just see.
Well, I'll tell you what, when the iPad version comes out, I think you're going to start using calendaring on your iPad, because I'm really excited about our iPad version. At first, when we were thinking about it, we had some ideas. And at first, you know, we're not going to do an app if it doesn't make sense, just to be very clear. Even iPhone, I don't know if you know this or not, we came out with Fantastic Hell in 2011. We didn't come out with our iPhone app until basically the end of 2012, because we didn't have an idea for iPhone. We're not just going to make an app to make an app, because that's how you fail. And I think the iPad version, we have this concept that you'll see when it comes out that's going to make the iPad version very unique, much more unique than the Mac or the iPhone version. So hopefully you'll like it.
In your spare time, are you teaching? Because you really ought to teach.
Thanks. I want to teach. One of the things I do in my spare time is I advise companies. I've had people who've pinged me to say, oh, hey, can you help us? You know, can you advise us on design? Can you advise us on business? Because I really have also a big, big love of business. I love the whole concept of, you know, how do you make it fair? Because I think business is design as well. If the app is priced too much or too low, you're not doing your customers or yourself a service. And obviously, you can't stay in business, right? It's like Walt Disney said, I make films to make money, to make more films, right? And I really believe that. And I think business is so important, because if you don't get that right, you can't keep doing what you love. But I do want to teach. I want to figure out something that I can do to help people make better apps and make better experiences. Because at the end of the day, if you have really good apps and really good experiences, everyone wins, and that's what I think we're doing.
I teach at School of Visual Arts in the MFA Interaction Design program. I have so few, because it's a small program, but the students are so smart, so talented.
That's great. But
knowing how to take something good and make it great, knowing how to tweak something and make it, I mean, you and your partner obviously know a lot about that, and you, in speaking to you just in this brief time, you're very passionate about what you do and you have a lot of good ideas, and I'd love to see you teaching students at some level down the road.
I'd love to do it myself. You know, maybe what I'll do is at some point, once I come up for air in the next year, I'll even try to contact one of the local schools. I know Stanford actually does stuff with teaching where you can go in, and I'm sure if I said, hey, I really want to do this, and showed them my credentials, hopefully they would give me a shot.
Sounds good. And if people, obviously people go to Flexibits.com.
Get that extra I in there. Everyone wants to call it Flexbits for some reason.
Yeah, Flexibits. I emailed you like weeks ago at Flexbits by terrible sound.
Everyone does it. We tried to get the Flexbits domain just to do that, but I think they wanted like $5 billion. Yeah. I mean, they didn't really want that much, but they might as well have wanted that much.
Right. People can also, so if they go to flexibits.com/about, they'll find more information about you. And you're also MacGuitar on Twitter.
I am, MacGuitar. And yeah, hopefully check out our apps. If there's anything any of your listeners like or don't like, we actually like to hear things people don't like more than like, because we'd like to hope that we're doing things that are good. But if we don't get negative feedback, you know, during beta tests, it's like the hardest. Towards the end, no one gives any feedback. And we're like, come on, what's broken? What's bad?
They get worn down.
Yeah, no one. But you want negative, right? You want to be able to fix the things that are wrong.
Right.
So yeah, any feedback that any of your users have or things that they want, definitely we love to hear it. So contact us via our contacts page of Flexibits.
All right. Complainers, you heard that.
They did.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, listeners. We'll be back with another Big Web Show soon. Next week, in fact. Well, not next week, but soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.